Chapter 5. Dragon Fate Dais. The leaders of the storm hosts gathered atop the crater's crest. Tempers ran hot, and bewilderment ruled. No decision had been reached as to what to do next, and as the day grew old, none seemed to be forthcoming. Ionis did not take part in the debate. He found a block of stone to one side and sat upon it, removing his helmet to allow his pale skin to feel the sun and the sweat to dry. He remained there, facing west, as the day's shadows lengthened and the great worm shone in the evening, its flames becoming brighter as the sky darkened. When Chamon's sun had slunk past its coils and dipped behind distant Natrok, a shimmer in the air resolved into a lithe figure. Ionis stood and bowed, his hand over his heart.
Solemnis, the Silver Maiden. I give you greetings of the night. We are kin, you and I, united in death.
She said nothing but floated forward, the silver of her lower body flowing over the freshly turned rubble of Elixir. She gave Ionis a sad, lingering smile. Her face had lost its ferocious aspect, and Ionis presumed that aside from her skin of metal, she looked now much as she had in life, a beautiful, proud face haloed by red hair. She bowed her head and reached out a hand. From it sprouted a long tendril of rippling silver. It steadied itself and became the sword Ionis had gifted her from his reliquary. She took it in both hands and offered it up to him, much as he had offered it to her. Ionis took the returned blade. Its edges glimmered sharp and silver, and he marveled at the change.
Your work?
She smiled again.
You have done me a great honour, my lady.
By now, others had noticed what was occurring. The arguments of the war council subsided, and the lords of the hosts turned to watch this strange exchange. Ionis carefully replaced the hilt of the sword into the clasped hands of the skeleton on his staff.
Perhaps you could do me another. I would not ask, as you have done so much for us already. But we have come to an impasse. Your efforts are important. If we succeed here, then this city might live again, and you could go to your rest.
He smiled.
Or you might linger and remain its guardian.
She tilted her head to the side, awaiting his request.
Thank you, my lady. Firstly, tell me, where has the castle fled to?
She looked upwards at the great crucible and pointed.
I see. And how might we venture there with so great an assemblage?
She smiled again and beckoned. Without waiting to see if Ionis followed, she set off west into the city. The Lord Relictor went after her, tilting his head to meet Lord Vandus's gaze. Vandus nodded and motioned for his men to follow. A sepulchral quiet was on the city, and Vandus had no desire to break it in case the maiden's magic be broken also.
Sound no trumpet and say little, Vandus said, but spread the word. The Silver Maiden shows us the way.
The storm hosts gathered themselves rapidly and said nothing as commanded. They had marched for days and fought for much of the morning, but the magic of Sigmar made them strong and unwearying. Sleep they could stave off for days if need be. And so it was, for Solemnis did not halt to let them rest, but continued westward at a steady, unhurried speed. They passed back along the Anvrok Highway, past the turn to the bright Tor Gate. There Vandus sent messengers down to the encampment, and others to the entrance of the Silverway, and bade them take news of their progress back to Sigmaron. On for a dozen more miles the stormcasts proceeded, before Solemnis took them up an unassuming spur of the road into the bright Tor Mountains. In this part of Anvrok there was no sign of the storm host's recent invasion. They trod secret paths shown to them by Cryptborn's strange ally. Chaos tribes that had yet to face the Stormcast Eternals launched attacks, but they retreated soon enough. Once three had been bested, the army was attacked no more. Solemnis and Ionis led the way, the others keeping a wary distance. Cryptborn could be seen speaking with the ghost and listening attentively. What they spoke of was his alone to know. He was too far ahead for his words to be heard clearly, and from her they heard nothing at all. Before the eighth day was out, the storm hosts emerged from a narrow pass, and Vander stopped in amazement.
"The Argent Falls," he said.
For the last 3 days, the confines of the mountains had hidden all but hints of the Crucible and its strange guardian. Now revealed, Argentine filled the horizon, its coils impossibly vast. The great Crucible formed a halo around Argentine's upturned head. The roar of the dragonfires that heated the Crucible were loud. The mountains there rose up high, but gusting hot winds blew over them from the Drake's fires and molten silver, keeping them warm and free of snow. The Argent Falls plunged from the edge of the Crucible, falling miles through the air in a wide sheet. The surface was silver, but the orange glow of smelting was visible in the folds of the liquid. Where the falls struck the rock of Anvroch, gobbets of precious metals splattered across the mountainside, and a wide area around the river's headwater was covered in globular formations of pure silver. The remains of catcher channels could be seen half buried in the metal. These ruins of industry were far below the stormcasts, who looked down onto them from a high road. Beyond the falls was a little more of the land of Anvroch. Then the mountains stopped abruptly, and the sky voids began. The road they were on curled downwards, closer to the falls, before it crossed a bridge over a ravine. Smaller roads led off to the works there, and then the main road rose up again to a township on a crag opposite the army, as ruinous as every other city in Anvroch. At the brink of the cliff, the circular platform of a dais rose up on an artfully coiled staircase. 6 statues of dragons stood around its circumference. Vandus was close to Ionis and Solemnis, and heard his Lord Relictor speak.
"A dragon fate dais," Ionis said. "How can that aid us?"
Solemnis pointed a long-nailed finger at the dais and disappeared. Vandus waited a moment before calling out,
"Has she departed?"
"No. I sense her still," Ionis replied.
Vandus rode up beside him.
"I am glad. She is a good ally."
"She is in great pain," said Ionis matter-of-factly. "This place must have been fabulously wealthy. I have seen many Dragonfate shrines, but never one rendered in solid silver."
Kallanax made a growling purr.
"Kallanax approves. This is a fitting honor to the great Drakes. Silver is favored by them."
Vander stroked between Kallanax's horns.
"And yet, against the barbaric hordes of chaos, the protection of their old gods availed them little. There is only one god who can stand before the four, and that god is Sigmar. What would the Silver Maiden have us do, I wonder?"
"Let us consider the question upon the dais," said Ionis. "The answer may come to us there more easily, and that is where she pointed."
"We cannot all go. Look at the road. The town is small."
"We should not go alone. We have suffered several ambushes already. Summon Thustos and let his warrior chamber come with ours. He is deeply involved in this affair," said Ionis.
Vandus nodded. He raised his hand and horns blew. The hammer hands and the blade storms came forward. Together, they went down into the valley and up into the ruined town of Silverfall. The rumble of the Argent Falls drowned out all other sound. The heat of the silver was intense, and Vandus marveled that men had lived there at all. Roofless houses and workshops stretched up the mountainside behind the crag for some way, exhibiting that mix of Duodin and mannish craftsmanship that was the hallmark of Anvroch's dead civilization. They reached the dais. The base of its supporting stair rose from a village square, and a low wall edged it, but much of it had fallen away, leaving a dangerous drop to the rocks and silver accretions below.
"Thostus, Ionis, Andricus, come with me onto the dais," said Vandus.
No sooner had he said the words than a deeper roar undercut the thunder of the Argent Falls, the unnatural grind of machinery. It came from thin air.
"To arms!"
he yelled.
"Oh, another bloody ambush," growled Andricus.
"Judicators to higher ground! Liberators, shield wall!"
All around the assembled brotherhoods, slivers of green light split the air. Green-black drills ground through each, ripping wide the fabric of reality before withdrawing.
"Storm fiends!"
said a liberator.
"Skaven!"
His warning was cut short by a hail of bullets. Giant rat-like monsters shouldered their way out of the tears in the weft of the world. Some bore multi-barreled guns in the place of fists, and they fired as they came. Dozens of stormcasts were shredded, falling to their knees before disappearing in blurs of azure lightning. Behind the gun beasts came more giants, these armed with whirring drills and grinders. They bowed their heads and charged.
"Stand ready!"
called Vandus.
"Judicators, loose!"
yelled Andricus. A storm of bolts spat through the air, felling one of the giant rat monsters. It collapsed face first into the dirt with a pitiful grunt, revealing the swollen-headed rat thing bonded to its back. This twisted rattling mewled horribly until a hammer stroke ended its misery. Liberators charged the storm fiends. Those warriors that were not knocked flying by the swipes of the creature's arms rained hammer blows upon the knees and ankles, hoping to bring the giant beings low. Vandus drove Kallinax into the fray, but the storm fiends proved more than a match for the Lord Celestant and his steed, and they were driven back under the shadow of the dais. The storm fiends grunted in recognition, seeming to single him out, and soon Vandus was surrounded by three of the things.
"Protect the Lord Celestant!"
he heard Andricus shout. The rest of the battlefield was a blur to Vandus. His attention was focused solely on fending off the hammering blows of the storm fiends. Kallinax gutted one, and Vandus smashed the shoulder of another. But there were more coming, and were it not for the might of Heldensen, he would have been overcome. Behind the storm fiends came a flood of the lesser rat men. They leapt from the tears in the world and ran for cover with preternatural speed. Once established there, they opened fire with their rifles, the force of their magical bullets punching through Sigmarite and knocking stormcasts from their feet. The noise of battle rose high enough to challenge the falls, the racket of the Skaven's hellish weaponry, the whoosh of slain stormcasts departing for Azir, the clang of weapons, the shouts of men, and a frantic chittering at the edge of hearing. Vandus parried another deadly blow. Kallinax was forced closer to the edge of the cliffs. Then Vandus saw turquoise armor amid the gold of his own men. Thostos roared, and in that war cry was something of the man Vandus had known before. He and his warriors ran full tilt into the storm fiends.
"Vandus! Vandus, we come!"
shouted Thostos. He cut a storm fiend's leg free, sending it toppling. Hammers smashed into its head and the grafted rider, bludgeoning both to death.
"Slay the leader!"
bellowed Vandus. The warlord was larger than his servants, more metal than flesh, surrounded by a bodyguard of heavily armored black-furred henchmen. Thostos rallied his men about him and began battering his way toward the warlord, while Vandus was fully occupied deflecting the blows of a storm fiend. The next thing Vandus saw was a gout of black-green fire washing over his friend. Thostos's men fell, incinerated within their armor.
"Thostos!"
shouted Vandus, and his blows slew a further storm fiend, smashing its ribcage with a blast of energy. He urged Kallinax forward, but the Drakoth was shoved back. Another blast of fire. What Vandus saw next almost fatally distracted him. Thostos strode forward unharmed. The warp fire of the Skaven beast washed over him with no effect, and he slew the creature with a whirl of hammer and sword. Thostos pushed on for the warlord. The storm vermin bodyguard, somewhat tentatively, moved in to engage, but their halberds broke upon the Lord Castellant's inviolable skin, and Thostos struck them down in seconds. The leader fled, leaping up the stairs in fear. Andricus was close by and went after him. Vandus was now embattled with only two of the giant ratmen. Kallinax clamped his jaw around the leg of one, while Vandus battered back the second. With a mighty heave, Kallinax sent it toppling from the precipice. The second fought on. Kallinax rounded on it while it was still reeling from Vandus's blow and bit off its head. Still it fought. Whirling blades topped the stumps of its fists, and these caught on Heldensen, juddering hard until they pushed the hammer aside. The creature smashed into Vandus's injured shoulder and reopened the wound Myrak had dealt him. He cried in pain, backhanding his hammer into the beast's chest and finally slaying it. A second wave of storm fiends were emerging from the cracks between the worlds. Two came from a slit nearby, squeak roaring with idiot rage. A pair of prosecutors swept over them, blinding them with blasts of their hammers. Vandus and Kallanax leapt at them, the impact of their charge sending one of the creatures back into the hole it had come from. Vandus directed Heldensen against the second, obliterating it. Then, green lightning was all about him. A bolt of it sent Kallanax to his knees. Vandus urged him to rise, but Kallanax was dazed and unresponsive. The Stormcast looked up to see a bizarre, clattering machine bouncing down the ruined streets, spitting more lightning.
"Up, Kallanax! Up!"
he shouted. Bright white light speared down. The war machine exploded, raining wood and iron all over the town. A large wheel bounced down the street and hurtled off the edge of the cliff. From the steps to the Dragonfate dais, Ionis nodded at Vandus, the afterglow of his spell lighting his face. The ratmen were wavering. A strange stench filled the square. As one, they turned and fled, shrieking in terror. They melted into the ruins and vanished. The noise of battle ceased. There were three isolated crackles of fire. Then the roar of the falls reasserted itself. Thostus came to Vandus's side, drenched in blood. He raised his sword.
"Victory! Victory!"
Vandus cried, and clanged his hammer against Thostus's blade. He turned to raise a salute to Andricus upon the dais. Andricus raised his own blade. A final gunshot rang out. Andricus' stone heart buckled and fell, vanishing in a blur of light a moment before he could hit the street. Vandus, Ionis, and Thostos stood upon the dais. The view over the falls from the shrine was glorious, but Vandus spared it no glance. His jubilation at their victory was ashes in his mouth. Andricus would be sorely missed in the coming fight.
"We cannot call upon the God King's beneficence again," protested Vandus. "The others look to us. We must show strength, not weakness. And how are we to speak to the heavens?"
"Call upon the great Drake," rumbled Thostos. "These statues are raised to him."
"That was Salamnus's intention," said Ionis. "I am sure of it."
Vandus glanced from one man to the other. His eyes lingered on Thostos's cool blue stare. Would Andricus be that way when he returned? He felt a shiver of unease around Thostos, where before there had been only friendship.
"But I know not how," said Vandus.
Kallanax roared and rumbled as he prowled up the stairs to join the lords atop the dais. The Drakoth looked down upon his master, head cocked to one side in question. Vandus nodded hesitantly, unsure if he understood the beast.
"Very well. If you intend to talk with the great Drake, go ahead. What harm can it do?"
"You must retreat to the edges of the dais," said Ionis. "The Drakoth intends to speak with his father, the great Drake Dracothian, the first and greatest of their kind."
For an hour, the Drakoth bellowed and roared at the sky. None of the men understood his speech, but the urgency of it was arresting. In ones and twos, the Stormcast ceased combing the ruins for the Skaven and came to a halt, all eyes on the Dragonfate dais. Upon the other crag, where the majority of the army waited, the Drakoths of the other Lord Celestants assembled, adding their voices to Kallanax's roar, one by one. Darkness fell. The stars were dim against the brightness of the Silver Worm's fires, and the town flickered in the perpetual firelight. Finally, Kallanax ceased his petition. The stars grew brighter and brighter, until they outshone the fires of Argentine. The sky blazed as gloriously as those of Azir. Stars moved, and the night rippled and resolved itself into a smiling reptilian face as wide as the sky.
My son,
boomed the great Drake Dracothian. His voice rumbled from the mountain peaks. He could surely be seen and heard in every country of the hanging valleys of Anvrok. His teeth were the glimmer of stars, and in his coils galaxies turned.
How fare the wars of men?
Kallanax roared, his dragon tongue inscrutable. We have a boon to ask of you, mighty one, called Vandus. He stepped out from between the dragon statues, risking the zodiac beast's scrutiny. We must find the eldritch fortress that once crested the shattered city. Dracothian's regard pinned him in place. Vandus felt as a mouse must when sighted by a hawk.
I preferred it when it was Elixir, the sculpted city, the drake said.
There was a weighty mirth, timeless and savage, behind Dracothian's words.
Tell us where the fortress is, and Elixir might rise again.
A dark place, yet with a heart of light, said the beast. I saw it rise. It bathes within the crucible. Do you seek to reach it, to claim the hammer of the stars?
We do, said Vandus.
Then the sea of silver must cool, said Dracothian. The flames must go out. It has been long since I dared the worm Argentine's fires. He was among my most favored children before pride wormed into him, and Zinch's promises turned that into a canker. I will go and speak with him, for he is due a father's rebuke. Go swiftly, then, whilst his will is diverted. Farewell, noble Kallanax.
The great dragon disappeared. A cloud of lights streaked across the sky, shimmering into the west. The assembled stormcasts watched in awe. The stars halted. Constellations swirled and took on the form of the dragon again. Jaws sketched in stars arrowed towards Argentine and closed about his throat. The silver worm jerked. Its roar shook the mountains, carried upon an angry wind that made stormcast banners crack and icons waver. The worm's fires were extinguished, and flickering twilight was banished. True night fell. The two titans strove against each other in the sky. The underside of the great crucible was revealed entirely, the red heat glow dimming quickly, and the mountains cooling with it. Slowly, the argent falls solidified. A thick skin wrinkled over the silver. Great globs appeared, breaking the flow of the metal's silken appearance and rendering it ugly. The orange heat faded away, and the surface became a leaden grey in the fresh-born twilight. Hill-sized lumps of semi-molten silver slammed down, the first splashing apart with the impact, those coming later bouncing messily away and rolling glutinously down the hill, until the lumps that fell free were wholly solid. The river's flow slowed, stiffened, and stopped. The falls and river were both arrested, and the whole cooled into a solid, lumpen mass that creaked and pinged with the eerie music of metal.
Listen, said Ionis. Solemnis returns.
The Silver Maiden's haunting song filled the mountain valleys. Hundreds of Solemnis's flying swords flew to hang in front of the frozen waterfall. Solemnis's wordless singing reached a crescendo, and the swords plunged into the metal, making themselves into the rungs of a dangerous ladder. Overhead, the Battle of Titans raged on in the sky, as Dracothian fought his wayward offspring. The Eternals gaped at the spectacle, for Dracothian had served as Sigmar's mount, and was godly himself.
We climb then, said Thostos.
Now battle had gone, his voice had become colourless once more.
Aye, said Vandus. We climb. All of us,